You're listening to Wisconsin Today. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Today is WPR's one-day member drive. WPR programs add richness to your day, and they're listener-supported.
Show your support for the independent news, diverse perspectives, and meaningful conversations you rely on. Give now at WPR.org or by calling 888-202-2552.
And now is the time. And to encourage you, we have a $50,000 match in effect when you give right now. Your support of WPR goes twice as far.
Meet that match. You're smart. You want to know what's going on, both in the news and in the culture around us. And we're right there with you on Wisconsin Today.
And give as generously as you can at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552. And thank you for your support. This is Wisconsin Today. Last weekend, a string of heavy storms caused damage around the state, especially in southern and western Wisconsin.
Eight tornadoes touched down in different communities on Saturday, and rains caused flood warnings in several places along the Mississippi River.
That includes the city of Prairie du Chien. The city issued several street closures, and it's providing sandbags to residents to limit the damage from rising floodwaters.
We get a firsthand look now with Prairie du Chien City Administrator Chad Abram. Chad, thanks a lot for joining us today.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Chad, let us know what is going on right now. What are you watching for with the water there?
Right now, we are just making sure the water, you know, the levels don't increase any higher than the projected crest at 20.3. That is a higher amount, but not the highest in history, as you know. But that does affect a lot of things that were planned on St. Ferial Island, which is a island that sits between us. There's two bridges to gather to cross to the island. It has historic sites. It has a restaurant and bar on it. It has ball fields on it, music in the park. So that's the hardest part for this year, is the rearranging and reconfiguring schedules of all these events. Because as I stated earlier, we're used to floods when we don't have leaves on trees, but not when we have leaves on trees. So it's, but we've done this in the past. I've been living here since 1998. My prior job in law enforcement before becoming an administrator in 2018, I dealt with the floods. So we have a great historical archive of pictures and what levels, what roads we close. So it's a great collaboration of my staff and some county officials as well.
Don't have to go too far back in those historical archives. Just last spring, I talked to your mayor when I think did a crest at 23 feet there, if I remember correctly. Were you, as the rains were starting up this year, thinking, oh, no, not again?
Yeah, you know, it was one of those things where I was in Merrill this past weekend for a conference, and my wife called and said there's some downpours, mudslides on Highway 35. And I already knew that up north, because I still have families that live in the Twin Cities metro, and my parents live further north, that there was some rain coming. And I know where that rain goes, and I know how the Mississippi flows. And I lived on the river my entire life between here and when I lived back in the cities. So we know that when Minnesota, the dam at St. Paul crest, we know, okay, it's coming. And then when La Crosse crests, we're about 5 days behind La Crosse, the Lock and Dam in La Crosse. So as soon as we met Monday, we had right away over the weekend, I made some calls to my staff, and then we started our planning meeting right away Monday morning at 8:15, and we meet daily now just to give updates.
At what point do sandbags come out and you start drafting volunteers to start packing those?
You know, the best thing about this filling of the sandbags for an event like this, we were able to, we had sandbags left over from last year. So we had six pallets filled from last year that we stored throughout the year. So we then had two separate days of sand delivered to the, we have a prison here. The Wisconsin Department of Corrections has a prison. We deliver the sand to the prison, and the inmates fill all the sandbags, place them on pallets, and then we go get them and bring them to the street department. Last year was kind of a conundrum with the higher water, because it was the third highest flood in history, that we actually placed sand at the old police and fire department, which is now the radio station, and we had volunteers filling the stand because we couldn't keep up.
Looking at your weather forecast right now, good chance of rain coming up tomorrow through tomorrow night. Are you hoping for some drier days to let the river lower itself back down?
Yeah, I mean, the less amount of rain, tomorrow's rain should be okay because it's just a steady drizzle most of the day is what we're hearing. It's the downpours that affect the streams that dump into the Mississippi that affect us. So we're hoping to avoid any of those. And we don't know how long the water's going to be up. Looking at the forecast, St. Paul's going to crest this weekend, I believe, and start going down. But that means for a while for us to start going down. Every other dam up down to Prairie du Chien is cresting and staying at that level for quite some time. So we got some more events on St. Ferro Island coming up the following weekend. Thankfully, the 4th of July is not a big celebration here in Prairie du Chien like most communities have. That's in a small village of Eastman, just north of Prairie du Chien. But we do have other events scheduled the following weekend on the island, and there's still Legion ball games that need to be played. Thankfully, the high school is gracious enough to allow us to use their school for the Legion baseball games. But there's people that have weddings planned at the Dousman House. It's unfortunate this time of year.
Now, you mentioned this time of year, the season. You know, last year's flood was in the spring. When I expect Mississippi River flooding, snow melt hits it then. There's no snow. It's June. Do you worry that flood season is going to be more random and unpredictable if this is happening in late June?
You know, the last time we saw this was in June. Was it June of 2008, and it was during Rendezvous, which is a big celebration down on the island. Mm-hmm. And we actually didn't close the island. We actually built roads in order to have travel onto the island and off the island. It wasn't high, but it was high enough to restrict some of the roads. But we were able to move the Rendezvous and get people down there. That was the same instance. It was the downpours and rains that caused the flooding. So it all depends on Mother Nature. You know, we can't control Mother Nature. We were very low last year at the end of the season. The river was very low, and the snow melt was great this year. There was no flood, and then all of a sudden, here come the downpours. Here comes the river.
Chad, best to you as you're watching the water. Thanks for joining us.
You're very welcome. Thank you.
That's Chad Abrams, city administrator for Prairie du Chien. Now we turn to Janesville and recovery efforts there after a tornado struck the city on Saturday. Kevin Lahner is city manager for Janesville. Kevin, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
EF2 tornado there on Saturday. Chad, what kind of damage did that do?
Yeah, so there was significant damage in the city on Saturday. What we have seen so far is that, according to our damage assessment, we have at least 338 homes that have indicated some sort of damage. There's probably about a half a dozen that would be categorized as completely destroyed. And then we just have significant tree damage throughout the path of the tornado. And so our efforts right now are really focused on cleaning up all of those trees.
And what is that cleanup and recovery effort looking like right now?
Yeah, so what we have, and ever since the storm hit, the first priority was obviously to get the roads open so that emergency services could get to the different residences. And then we've shifted to a debris management program right now within our emergency operations center. Our public works crews are working extra long shifts ever since Sunday to remove trees. And so if the residents here are able to get the trees to the terrace, we are picking them up and bringing them to our compost center. We also have our compost center open for free to those impacted by this storm. And for those residents that are in Janesville, those hours are 8 to 7 Monday through Friday and 8 to 5 on Saturday. And then there's also storm debris. And so we have our landfill open for those as well. And Janesville has a city landfill, and our landfill hours are 8 to 3:30 on Mondays, Tuesday through Friday, 8 to 3, and Saturdays, 8 to 1. And that is free to Janesville residents through June 29th. Now. So that's really what our focus is at the moment.
If anybody's out there saying, yeah, I've got this kind of damage, I don't have the wherewithal to get a tree to the curb or the center, is there help available if people need that little extra help clearing of the debris?
Yes, so we have a volunteer location, the Old Rock County Job Center at 1900 Center Avenue, where both volunteers and those that need help can sign up. And so what's been happening, and we've had nearly 600 volunteers assist from various groups or just individuals. So if people have been signing up with us, and then we've been sending folks out to assist with that, and that's been occurring since Sunday. And so our staff and volunteers are manning that center right now. And then the other thing too is that if you do have damage or if you need assistance, that your residents are asked to call 211 here in Janesville.
I was watching that storm go through on Saturday, Chad. Did the alert system work pretty well? It seemed like we had pretty good early warning on a lot of the tornadoes that we were at risk in a lot of the communities that were hit.
Yes, and it was, we did have the tornado warnings going off, and the folks were receiving the notifications on their phone. So it feels like there was ample notice, and that folks, we were very fortunate. Folks got into their basements. There were no injuries, no significant injuries as a result of the tornado, and there was one rescue where our firefighters had to go and get some folks out of a basement. But that was. We were very fortunate not to have injuries or fatalities as a result of the storm.
You want to take just a few moments, Chad, to encourage people to do what Janesville residents did, take these warnings seriously?
Yeah, I mean that is the biggest thing. This is no joke, and sometimes I think that we get immune to the warnings because it just seems like severe weather has been more frequent, at least this season, and maybe for the last few seasons. But they are. Very important to pay attention to when there is a severe thunderstorm or tornado warning. You are supposed to get into the basement, and you should quickly. I reviewed the flood damage, or the I'm sorry, the tornado damage here in the city, and literally the top half of houses have been taken off, and so it is a serious issue, and you should take those warnings seriously.
Kevin, thanks a lot for joining us.
I'm glad to be here. Thank you for your help.
That's Janesville City Manager Kevin Lahner talking about the EF2 tornado that touched down in the city over the weekend. Earlier, we heard from Prairie du Chien City Administrator Chad Abram about flooding in that community.
Coming up on Wisconsin Today, vape and e-cigarette stores have sprung up all over the state. Find out how one Dane County community called a halt on new shops and why they worry about the impact on local youth. That's coming up next on WPR News.
You're listening to Wisconsin Today.
The city of Monona is a month and a half into a ban on new stores that specialize in vaping products.
Last month, the city enacted a 180-day moratorium to stop e-cigarette retailers from getting zoning and building permits. That move comes after the city rejected adding a fourth vape shop in the community of 8,500 people. That store would have been located near local schools.
In a letter to the Planning Commission, Monona's police chief, Brian Cheney, called the proposal a tobacco billboard for kids walking to and from school.
It's a concern facing a lot of communities around the state. As the moratorium continues, we take an in-depth look at the city's decision and its impact so far. Neil Steckschulte is city administrator for the city of Monona in Dane County. Neil, welcome to Wisconsin Today.
Oh, my pleasure, you guys. Thanks for the invite.
All right, we're about 50 days or so into this moratorium on new vape shops. What does this moratorium say? How exactly does this work?
Essentially, municipalities in Wisconsin, under our police powers authority through state statute, can issue development-related land use moratoria for a variety of reasons, including public safety and public health reasons, which is exactly what we've decided to do here in Monona as we kind of evaluate our options on the appropriateness of how many of these types of establishments we'd like to see in Monona.
What are the concerns about having vape shops, having too many vape shops, I guess, per capita in Monona?
Yeah, I think there's a couple of things. There were concerns were raised when kind of our last application was coming through before our plan commission. Certainly just the sheer number of these types of establishments was one thing. Really, the thing that really kind of drove our desire to kind of take a closer look at these was kind of the proximity to local high schools, in terms of also in terms of just kind of impact to what neighboring uses kind of end up being related to these types of uses. So, but I think really from our police chief, it was more of a public safety concern. These are supposed to be in most cases an age restricted type of substance. So, you know, when we're getting them, having one placed when they're in pretty close proximity to a school or other areas where kids are going to be walking down, we just kind of want to make sure and see if there's really, if we have an appropriate amount of regulation or if we need to actually do a little bit more to regulate these types of establishments.
How have owners of these establishments, the current ones, vape shop owners, reacted to this moratorium? Do they worry they're being painted as bad guys here?
I think maybe probably on some level a little bit. Really, our existing facilities, existing stores are not affected by the moratorium. Mm-hmm. They're still allowed to continue to operate. One could even probably go so far as to say it actually creates a competitive advantage for those stores, since new ones, at least for the time being, can't come in. I think a lot of those establishments right now really have good relationships with the city. They communicate with our clerk's office and our police department as needed for licensing, and really haven't had any significant issues going forward. But it's just a matter of kind of making sure, again, you know, what is an appropriate number of these types of establishments for a community our size.
Yeah, the community your size, about 8,500 people with 3 vape shops currently. Now, last month, WRT-FM recorded this brief bit of conversation among officials at a city council meeting.
Somebody referred to it as Vape Alley the other day.
Really?
So this concept of a Vape Alley running down sort of the main drags of Monona, is that something that people are worried about?
I think there's definitely some concern over that. Obviously, that was one of our alders who voiced that, and is also a business owner on Monona Drive. I think in terms of what, as we go forward, and I'm sure folks are aware of kind of the housing crunch that Dane County and Madison is in, you know, probably looking to increase our residential density. In Monona, we're kind of landlocked. We can't really go out and add area to the city. So really our key ability to increase residential opportunities is going to be redevelopment on our main drags. So Broadway Drive and Monona Drive are the two key areas. We're looking to create that. And we want to make sure that we're surrounding those with suitable and compatible uses that are going to make it an attractive area to live. So I think that's probably one of the main concerns behind that. Also, from just another business standpoint, even from other commercial businesses, we want to make sure that any sort of these types of uses are compatible with what's going there. I think we'd still like to see more restaurants, more commercial shops, more delis, more food-related types of things are really what a lot of residents are often looking for. How do those interact and work with these types of establishments?
There was a proposal for a 4th vape shop in Monona. That happened. The proposal came in before the moratorium. It was rejected for other reasons than the moratorium. But the police chief there, Chief Brian Cheney, had written a letter to the Planning Commission saying it was too close to schools. Quote, this business would in essence serve as a tobacco billboard advertisement to school-aged children. End quote. That one, I was looking on the map, would have been pretty close to a handful of schools, really. Is there a concern about the present locations of vape shops in the area being close to schools?
Yeah, absolutely. I think in terms of if anybody's been driving on Monona Drive during school, or especially around lunch hour or right after school, you see the number of kids that are walking up and down that whole corridor, not to mention everybody driving on the corridor. Everybody sees how many cars are parked at the high school or in other schools during the day. There's quite a few. That traffic is significant. And having having that easy of access to those types of establishments, it certainly is enough to raise a concern, I think. And that's, I think, where the chief was coming from when he provided that letter.
Now, this is smoke shops or vape shops in particular. Is there a concern that there might be convenience stores, gas stations, things like that, that don't have enough of a percentage of their business with these products to qualify to be worried about the moratorium, still selling these products, though?
No, that's a great question. We've kind of looked at those. And that is one of the things we'll be doing, and we've kind of already started this staff research and looking into that. What we're finding is that like those existing facilities where I think it's less than 10% of their sales are related to those vape type of sales oftentimes there's enough of their licenses and other regulations that either interacting with Dane County or with the city that we have plenty of other regulatory steps kind of already on in position with those particular users for a variety of reasons and different things, including selling alcohol, other types of things, that there's enough eyes and traffic on those areas down there that, and they have a kind of have a track record of following the rules, so to speak. I think those corporate entities, especially like gas stations, are very usually relatively pretty strict on making sure that their staff is following those types of rules. So we haven't had any major issues with those existing users who are already selling those types of products. So, but we are definitely at least taking a look at what the potential impacts of ordinance changes might be on those existing uses.
Neil Steck-Schulte is with us, city administrator for the city of Monona in Dane County, talking about a moratorium going on there, restricting new vape shops, e-cigarette shops in that community. Neil, we're talking about Monona here, but there was an explosion of vape shops all over the state, all over the country. Are you hearing from colleagues in other communities who are dealing with this same issue, trying to figure out how to proceed?
Yeah, absolutely. We've certainly heard. I know Chief Cheney has certainly heard from other police chiefs in Dane County in the area, kind of wanting to monitor how we proceed. I know from a fact of a lot of other administrators and planners are kind of watching to see how we proceed and how this goes here. We did some quick research and asked around if anyone else was looking at doing this. Several said that they weren't until they heard that we were, and then it has kind of caused them to maybe consider that possibly moving forward. It wouldn't surprise me to see a couple of other folks jump on board and maybe take a closer look at these things. Dane County Public Health has been a great partner on this already. They reached out to us once we heard we were doing this and wanted to kind of, you know, basically help us provide any health data related to, you know, any hazards related to, you know, to vape shops and vaping itself. The American Lung Association also has reached out and said they're interested in providing whatever data they can. So our health partners have really been really, really super positive on that. We're excited about that. So I don't think we're going to be the only ones to take a closer look at this going forward.
Another community that did tackle this was Milwaukee. They also had a ban, a moratorium for about half a year last year. Now zoning regulations there prevent e-cigarette and tobacco retailers from opening within 1,000 feet of schools. Could Monona end up in a similar place saying, okay, yeah, we'll review new applications, but not within this radius from a school?
Yeah, I would, you know, certainly hard to say exactly where the full staff recommendation and council action will fall, but I think that some sort of buffer from those types of, you know, of schools, places with kids is certainly going to be one thing that's going to be taken a very, very hard look at. And I would suggest has a probably good chance of ending up being in the ordinance. Absolutely.
Now, I do know some grown-ups who vape, and they do that instead of smoking a pack or two of cigarettes a day. They might say, well, hang on. Yes, we want to keep kids from doing this, but I'm an adult. I'm using a legal product. Is this infringing on me in some way? Is that a concern for Monona as you review these policies?
You know, I think on some level, certainly we're not looking to prohibit these types of uses. Again, it's, you know, you could make the same argument about alcohol establishments, regular tobacco, you know, other sorts of kind of age restricted substances that are out there. So we're not looking to prevent these things from happening, but we are making sure that we want to make sure they're being done in a logical location, and we want to make sure that they're being done responsibly throughout the community. So. You know, I think adults are not going to have any problems trying to find options to acquire these products. That's really not the intent. I think the main concern is certainly from definitely a health standpoint with our youth, and also from just an overall safety standpoint to make sure that these are being done in a manner that fit with the community.
You got this moratorium going on for a while longer now. As you've mentioned, city staff are looking at the possible next steps. What are you hoping comes out of this when this moratorium expires? What kind of things are you hoping to see in place?
So I think what we're really hoping for is specific ordinance language that we want our city council to consider. Staff is certainly, we've done a lot of the work we've done so far. As you mentioned, we did take a good look at what the city of Milwaukee has done. You know, we're very interested in following up and kind of evaluating and see how successful they feel their ordinance updates and changes were there. But we also know that one size doesn't fit all. We're going to want to make sure that whatever rules and new things we put in place, if we do change the ordinance, are appropriate for Monona and the community here. Also, we have an understanding that us doing something here could also affect our neighbors and other places immediately around us. So doing some coordination with them in terms of what their regulations might be, probably going to be a later step in terms of our implementation on this. But we're hopefully, really at the end of the day, we just really want to see some good sound regulations that enhance the public health for the community in general, but particularly our young people. But then also, again, makes kind of sets us on a course for development going forward in the future that really sets us in the right path.
Neil, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us.
My pleasure, you guys. Thanks for the invite.
Neil Steckschulte is city administrator for the city of Monona in Dane County. We talked about Monona's temporary ban on granting zoning permits for e-cigarette stores.
Coming up on Wisconsin Today, artists from around the globe play to adoring fans at Summerfest in Milwaukee.
You know, it's the great gig on the Great Lake.
A pair of Milwaukee singer-songwriters tell us about what makes the music festival so special. That's ahead on WPR News.
I'm headed to Wisconsin. Since my heart ain't glow, I'm a coming to that state and my heart's beating fast, and I'll jerk my banjo gently, twiddle my mustache on Wisconsin.
It's Wisconsin Today. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Kate Archer-Kent, and that is On Wisconsin. It was Milwaukee singer-songwriter Trapper Shep who added lyrics and melody to the obscure Bob Dylan song and collaborated with Dylan to take it to the finish and publish it in 2019.
With Summerfest underway in Milwaukee and hundreds of talented musicians from around the world converging on our state, we check in for a local perspective with Trapper Shep and Micah Emmerich, Milwaukee producer, singer, and songwriter.
They both performed at the festival last weekend. Trapper Shep's most recent album is called Siren Songs. Micah Emmerich's debut album drops next month. It's called Promises. Hello to you both. Welcome to Wisconsin Today.
How's it going?
It is today, and we are in Wisconsin. How fitting. Thanks for having me.
Well, you both performed at Summerfest in recent days. Micah, let's start with you. How did it feel?
Oh, it felt amazing. It was a lot of energy to be up on that big stage, and I had a lot of ground to cover as well.
What do you mean by that?
It's just it's a bigger stage. I mean, I've played at a lot more like what you call club shows, Cactus Club, and different venues around here, and they don't have a stage even half the size of that. So I was running a lot in preparation for the show.
Trapper, how many Summerfests are under your belt now?
10, 11, 12. I think I lost count somewhere along the way. Too many Summerfests for me.
Does each one feel new and different in a way?
I've kind of been at a different place emotionally and physically all these different years. I remember the first Summerfest, I had just come off of having a spinal decompression surgery. So who knows if I was all there for that one, but every one has been uniquely different, and I'm grateful for the opportunity.
Micah, did you have any nerves that you were dealing with at all to be on your Summerfest stage?
Not necessarily. It was just a lot of excitement. I've been, if anything, I deal with nerves more so afterwards once all the adrenaline leaves and I'm like, oh my goodness, that just happened. I, for some reason, sometimes my stomach gets a little bit messed up after shows, but that's just a me thing. I'm bringing Tums in preparation for that as well. But it was a lot of fun, a lot of excitement. And me and my guys, we practiced really hard for it. So, you know, at the end of the day, being up there is the fun part. There's a lot of work put into it. And, you know, it's all worth it at the end of the day once you're up there.
Well, let's sample a song from you both. And Trapper, we'll start with you. This is Meet Me at the End of the World. This is a cover of Jesse Malin's. Let's take a listen.
Hey, tell me what you're gonna do now.
Harper, what would you like to say about this cover and about the song Meet Me at the End of the World?
Well, my good friend Jesse Malin in New York City had a spinal stroke, and not fun at all. He couldn't be with us at Summerfest this year. And that song we've been using to raise funds for him to help him get back to the stage, if you will. And there's a number of other really big efforts happening right now. Actually, Bruce Springsteen, Green Day, and other artists are teaming up to raise money for him. So it's a really lively summertime jam, and I'm glad you like it.
Micah, we are going to hear your song, My Process. Can you talk a little bit about this song, My Process, and where you're going with it?
Being in Milwaukee and following, you know, the creative pursuit of music and trying to make it a career, sometimes you got people who have a certain opinion on what you should be doing or where you should be. I've been told to move out of Milwaukee and that there's no way that I'm going to make it in music if I, you know, do what I'm trying to do in Milwaukee. But I feel like with the internet age that you can do whatever you want and you should be able to do whatever you want. And everybody has a different process at the end of the day. So I just really took that inspiration as, you know what, it's my process and everybody's got their own and I'm going to make mistakes along the way and that's fine.
I wonder, Trapper, what advice do you have for an artist who's playing the festival for the first time and really finding their place in music?
Well, I think you can't take any of it too seriously. I mean, you can't put too much weight on one gig. You don't want to bring any of that nervous energy to the stage. I, you know, giving other musicians advice is really, really difficult because everyone has their own path. I mean, look at my hero, Bob Dylan. By the time he was 20, he fled the dairy state in the Midwest and went to New York City and things ended up pretty good for him. So I'm sticking around here. I had published a song with Bob Dylan about Wisconsin. You know, it's very hard to gauge what anyone's path should be other than your own. And even that can be difficult at times. So I apologize for the vague answer, but you know, the first Summerfest for me was quite monumental in a way, but you don't necessarily have to bring all those nerves to the stage either. So
I wonder, Micah, how are you learning to trust yourself, trust your gut as a singer, songwriter, and producer, and really navigating this path for you? What is that like?
Yeah, I mean, I grew up listening to a lot of different types of pop music. My dad was a pastor growing up in church, and my mom was a worship leader. So I feel like my music experience growing up was a little bit sheltered. But not to say that's a bad thing, because I feel like it created my love for pop music and the songwriting, the structure that goes behind a lot of those things. I kind of had to make do with what I could. I got very into a lot of powerful lyricists like Ed Sheeran, some really popular producers like John Bellion along the way. And so, yeah, I just like to trust that, you know, what feels good is good and just keep rolling with that.
Is there any aspect of Summerfest or a musician you're looking forward to performing this year?
I mean, just being at Summerfest was already such a huge accomplishment. Being on the Miller stage, I had seen a lot of my favorite artists back in the day. Like I just said, John Bellion was one of the producers I look up to. I'd seen him back in 2018 on the Miller stage. So that was a big one. But I'm also going on tour, and it's going to be my first time in Chicago, Minneapolis, Nashville. I'm playing with some really awesome local artists over there, and I'm feeling the love right now from all the independent scenes nationwide right now.
Trapper, what role does Summerfest have in elevating up-and-coming Wisconsin musicians?
Well, if you are from Wisconsin, everyone asks, are you playing Summerfest? Did you play Summerfest? So maybe at the end of the day, it's just that little bit of flex to tell that person who might not be super into the music industry and all the nuances of it that, yes, you were playing Summerfest. But it is pretty funny, actually, how, you know, you say you're a musician to someone and they always jump straight to Summerfest. Does that happen with you, Micah?
Definitely. I mean, yeah. I have people who are like, oh my goodness, I'm going to take off work and come to the show. I'm like, wait, no, come to my album release party. Hold on.
Yeah.
Well, thank you both for joining us. We really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Of course. Yeah, thanks for having me. Practice my patience, sit down and see all the flowers
blooming around my life. They're growing with. Those are Milwaukee-based singer-songwriters Trapper Shep. His most recent album is called Siren Songs, and Micah Emmerich. Debut album called Promises drops next month, and we're listening to his new single, Nowhere.
Wisconsin Today is the work of a team of producers, hosts, and technical directors. Learn more about us at wpr.org/Wisconsin Today. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to WPR News.